It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in just a bit, as kids from around the nation prepare to compete in tonight's National Spelling Bee Finals, we'll talk about whether or not spelling still matters in today's digital world.
First, we're talking about the happiest words in the English language. Mathematicians at the University of Vermont ranked 10,000 words from most positive to least positive.
And we want to hear from you on this. What do you think is the most positive, the happiest word in the English language, and why? And maybe is there a word you'd put as the least positive? Call 800-642-1234. Call right now, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Linguist Erica Ogren is here with us to talk about the study. She's a writer for Mental Floss. Erica, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So how were these words ranked? How did they decide, you know, how this was going to pan out?
Well, they asked people, they presented people with the words and asked them to rate them from 1 to 9 on happiness. But they got a lot of people to do it. So for each word, they had 50 ratings. So it's a pretty reliable picture of how people evaluate the happiness of each of these words.
And how did these words emerge from the field? How did these words get chosen as rankable?
Well, they took the top, the most frequent 5,000 words from four different sources, Twitter, Google Books, New York Times, and from a database of music lyrics. So if you pooled them all together, that would be 20,000 words, but of course they overlap a lot, so all together it's 10,222 words, but it spans a wide range of types of language use, from music lyrics to Twitter to New York Times and books.
So happy is sort of a subjective word in a way. How do you figure out if a word actually makes you happy?
Well, they were a little, it's a little open to that question. People were just instructed to rate your own happiness in response to this word. So some people might do it by the meaning or the sound or the way it makes them feel. But people didn't say, what kind of question is this? I can't imagine. This is ridiculous. Everyone has a sense of whether a word seems happy to them or not.
All right. Well, I'm sure by now everyone's dying to find out, what are the happiest words?
Okay. Well, number one is laughter. And if you run down the top 30 really fast, it would be laughter, happiness, love, happy, laughing, laugh, joy, successful, win, rainbow, smile, won, pleasure, smiled, rainbows, winning, celebration, enjoyed, healthy, and so on. So,
wow. So just reading them like that, it's like a visit to the Smurf Village or something. So
yeah,
does it get more complex as you go down the list a little further?
Yeah, if the laughter sounds good, that sounds happy. And when you start reading down the list like that, it starts to be a little so happy it's kind of annoying. But when you get further down, you get some more calming, sort of interesting words. And that was the basis of the piece that I wrote on it, was me sort of picking the top words that appealed to me as the most happiest.
Yeah, and that was really fascinating, your picks. These are things that are a little deeper that sort of evoke feelings. Some of your votes, the word easier was in 159 on that list. Interesting, honest, forest, Saturday and dinner. I think everyone can agree on Saturday and dinner. What do you think it is about these words that sort of strikes home for people?
Well, when I look at it all together, they're all sort of calm happiness. The more sort of excited happiness, I guess, didn't appeal to me in the same way. They are too in your face, maybe. But I like the pal, warmth, welcome, dearest. Those, to me, are very pleasant, happy words.
And let's go to our listeners now. And you can join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What to you are the happiest words in the English language and why? We're going to start off with Joe in Racine. Hi, Joe.
Hi. My happiest word is elated.
Elated.
And my saddest word would be, or worst word, would be mortified.
Mortified, embarrassment, and some other negative things packaged in there. But elated, what about that one, Erica?
Well, let's see. That one is, I'm looking to see where it is. I don't know if it might not be one of the most frequently used words. So I don't know if that's even on the list. But yeah, of course, elated is this sort of very intense happiness. So that's a good happy word.
And let's go next to Daniel in Minong. Hi, Daniel.
Hello. By far the happiest word is mama, spoken by a baby.
Mama spoken by a baby. That is, yeah, that's a pretty good one. Thanks a lot for that thought, Daniel. And I guess context, I mean, they're not considering context here, but that does sort of play into it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, that mama is, I see here, 369. And of all the family words, mother and the mother words ranks the highest. So that's definitely something we have good associations with.
Well, Roxanne in Madison really likes the word tree. You can't disagree with that. Is tree on the list somewhere?
Tree is number 480. It has a good high score.
480, yeah, that's a nice one. I love the word rain. It almost seems like, you know, could be something sad, but I just love rain so much. To me, that would definitely be one of my picks. Let's go to Bill, who's joining us in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Bill.
Hi there. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Oh, congrats. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah, that was very high, if I recall. Yeah, congratulations is in the top 20. It's number 25. So that's way up there, right after celebrating.
Celebrating. What do you think it is about these words? I mean, is it the emotional associations that really kind of move them up the list, or do some words just delight us because of the way they sound? You know, think about the word giggle. It kind of sounds like a laugh.
Yeah, I think if it has the combination of those two things, then that's a real winner. But there are a lot in the top happiest that have to do with success, like earn, rich, wealth, things like that do show up a lot in the happiest words. So I think people are associating them with station or aspiration, maybe beyond just the word itself.
And let's go to the other end of the list and look at some of the least positive words. What's down at the bottom?
Well, the very last is terrorist. That's the least happy word. And then so it's terrorist, suicide, rape, terrorism, murder, death. Those are, you know, clearly not happy words.
Yeah, those are some really unhappy words. Yeah. Are there ones that are sort of, I don't know, marginal, that you kind of walk the line between happy and unhappy?
Yeah, so right in the center would be a 5 score, and there's a bunch of those, because, the things like that. That they're, you know, they're words, you don't really feel one way or the other about it. But it's, what's surprising is that you would think that most of the language sort of ranks in the middle. We've got happy words on one end, we've got not happy words on the other end, and then most of it's pretty neutral. But actually, the language is heavily skewed toward happy. So you don't get to the neutral middle until over 7,000 words down the list. So most words rank toward the happy end.
So the compass needle points toward happy in the English language.
Yeah, it seems like the way we use language is more pro-social. So the language skews toward happy, which is good for all of us.
We've got a call here from Gloria in Milwaukee. Hi, Gloria. What's your vote?
My favorite word, for lots and lots of reasons, is together. I haven't been able to find another English word that quite represents that. But I love it when we talk about family together and couples together and people that are working for the common good together.
Thank you for
that.
That's a nice one.
High. That's up there in the 800s with dogs and smooth and Santa. So that's a good word.
That's in good company. Erica, do you have a favorite word? A most happy one?
I liked Saturday. That's just, it conjures up a lot of good feelings for me. So Saturday is a good word for me.
Saturday is a good word. It's better than Sunday night anyway.
Yeah.
Erica, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Erica Okrent, linguist and writer for Mental Floss, about the happiest and unhappiest words in English. Teens from around the nation will take the stage tonight in an attempt to tackle the spelling words like phenomenology and onomatopoeia. We're talking about the finals of the Scripps National Spelling Bee, which will be airing tonight on national television.
And while most of us won't be attempting those words anytime soon, spelling is something that affects us on a daily basis. With the ever-increasing presence of things like text messaging and autocorrect, Some people are questioning the merits of spelling and suggesting, hey, maybe it doesn't matter as much as it used to. So does it?
Well, joining us now to help us take on this question is Mignon Fogarty, better known as the Grammar Girl. She's the founder of the Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing series, which features several books and a weekly podcast on spelling and grammar. Mignon, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, nice to talk with you.
Well, spelling is one of those subjects that people either really get into or they kind of hate it. It seems like there's not a lot of middle ground. What is it about spelling that polarizes people?
I think it requires a lot of memorization. And I remember watching my father studying with my younger brother, going through those spelling tests. And for him, it was absolutely painful. I mean, it often ended in tears because it was so frustrating and he had to have it memorized by the morning. And it was just a bad time in the house. But I think if you can get past that, the idea of rote memorization, and get into the cool parts about where the words come from, their roots and their historical meanings and things like that, it can actually become quite interesting and fun, maybe if you're not under that kind of have to know it by tomorrow morning kind of pressure.
And that's the way these kids at the Scripps Spelling Bee study, I've seen documentaries, they do look at the country of origin and word and spelling patterns, and they really turn it into a science. But a lot of people don't have the patience for that, I guess, or the interest.
Right. I think it's a hobby, you know, just like many other unusual hobbies. You know, the people who go into competitive solving of a Rubik's Cube or something like that, where you just have a particular hobby and you find it interesting for some reason, and you're willing to put the time in to become really good at it. And then it becomes fun and a challenge, and you want to be the best at what you do.
Do you think that, you know, even in a world where there is autocorrect, that we still get kind of worked up when people misspell things, kind of judgy about misspelled words?
Oh, definitely. When people ask me why grammar and spelling matter, I always tell them because people judge the quality of your argument and your ideas by the way you present it. So you could have some fabulous, brilliant insight, but if you write it with typos and misspelled words and missing punctuation, people won't take it as seriously. They'll discount the very ideas you're trying to convey. So if you want to be taken seriously, it's important to get the spelling and punctuation and grammar right.
Now, the argument has been made from academics and cultural critics that maybe spelling doesn't matter as much anymore. If you look at time in the classroom right now, it's pretty limited and there's a lot of stuff to get through. And why should kids spend their time learning spelling when there's so many other things to get to? So does spelling really matter when we have lots of tools to help us spell things correctly?
Well, it's great that we have those tools. I mean, I rely on spell check myself, but I think that they're only tools, and you need to have the confidence to know when spell check or autocorrect are leading you astray. You know, spell check isn't going to catch all the homonyms that you can mix up, the affects or effects, and, you know, the words that sound the same and are real words but have different meanings. So it's still important to know what the right words are to use, I think. I believe that.
Can't we get some of that from context, though?
Oh, sure. And, you know, I see the argument they're making. So when I'm text messaging a friend, you know, it is more acceptable to use all lowercase letters, for example, in those very informal contexts. I mean, we are more accepting of errors in things such as text messages. But I still think that in more formal writing, in school papers, for example, or company annual reports or company press releases, getting it right matters.
What sorts of benefits do you think we get from being a good speller?
Oh, I think probably the biggest benefit is just peace of mind. You know, when you send something out, that you know it's right instead of having to worry if you have an error.
Peace of mind. And I guess you're saying people can absorb your arguments better, which is a pretty persuasive thing to have in your back pocket.
Right. It's a lot like, choosing what to wear. It's all about the impression you're making on other people. So you can project an image of intelligence and professionalism, or you can project an image of, you know, being a no-good slacker. And it all just depends on, you know, a lot of different things about how you put yourself out in the world.
Do you think, though, it's possible that we are too hung up on spelling and that it could unfairly lead people to have a bias against other people or other groups of people who may not have the same background.
Yes, absolutely. I think that, you know, you should not, even though it's a fact of life that we do judge people based on their spelling and grammar, you know, an enlightened person would not do that. You know, you should look at, you know, when I see those internet comments, you know, someone has made an argument on some topic and they have a typo or a misspelling, and then someone attacks them and says, well, obviously you don't know anything about, I don't know, the national debt because you can't even use the right version of the word your. Well, you know, that is the weakest counter argument you could possibly make. It really is sort of nitpicky and serves no real purpose to further a discussion. So I do think that when people get too hung up on those kind of errors, it's sort of bad for intelligent discourse.
So where's the dividing line then? When is it okay to put on our spelling gloves and go to the mat and just insist that people get it right and that we get it right? And when is it okay to allow for differences and to just hear the argument instead of look at the words?
I think in a perfect world, we would focus on the argument. You know, in reality, certainly in school, it's really important for teachers to emphasize to kids that they need to learn their spelling and grammar and get it right in their papers and in their schoolwork. I think that's the most important place to focus on proper spelling and grammar because, you know, you're preparing those kids to go out in the world and make the good impression that we all hope they make. You know, I know in my life, I don't get really hung up on whether the emails people send me have perfect grammar. You know, everyone always says they're nervous to write to me because I'm a grammar girl. I get these, like, blanket apologies at the end of emails. Oh, no, I'm sorry for any errors there might be in here. You know, that's just not necessary. I'm not picking every little, you know, I'm not reading my email looking for every possible error. I'm interested in what people are trying to tell me.
That's a relief because Rob and I were reading through the script before we introduced you and we weren't sure about something, so we changed it because we didn't want you to call us out on it.
I hear that a lot.
I want to talk more about technology because that seems to be a sticking point today. And you could make the argument that technology is making us write more than ever. We're more prolific. We're texting. We're tweeting. But you could also say it's just, you know, spreading bad habits. Where do you come down?
Right. It reminds me of a funny story. So I recently made a card game called Peeve Wars, and it's every card is a little pet peeve. But there are also grammar heroes. And what we made one of the grammar heroes autocorrect because it helps you, right? Autocorrect is a hero because it catches your errors. But people think so negatively about autocorrect because it so often makes the wrong change. So we had a big debate about whether it should even be a hero or if it was more of a problem.
Well, it's interesting in you know, out in the world, when you're out and about, you do see a lot of spelling errors on lots of places, from official places that you feel maybe should know better to just, you know, everyday spelling errors. I don't know, should we be judgmental? Should we run over to the grocery store clerk and say, you know, that's not how you spell potatoes, or should we just keep it to ourselves?
You know, there's different schools of thought. So I'm not the kind of person who would go correct people. I to me, it seems very aggressive and rude. But there are definitely people who do it and have told me they've gotten very positive responses from businesses when they go and politely and kindly tell them, you know, I just discovered an error on your sign and I thought you might want to know so you can change it. You know, don't go up with whiteout or a Sharpie and deface their sign. That's a crime. But if you're polite and sincere and not judgmental, you're going to be much more likely to get a good response from the person you're trying to help.
So something like a spelling bee that's going on right now, how important is this? Is it something that's culturally significant, or is it just kind of a look at a subculture of a lot of kids who are really, really into spelling?
I think it's an awful lot of fun, and I think it is really sort of a subculture of kids who are into spelling. You know, the words that they're learning, they are not going to use most of them in their everyday life. Those are really, you know, complicated, hard words that you wouldn't want to use, you know, on your website or in an email to a friend. They're learning a lot of those words just for the unusualness of them, the quirkiness, and to prove that they can master a difficult task. So I think of it in a lot in the same way I think of maybe some of the more unusual sports in the Olympics. You know, the people who do ribbon dancing, for example, you know, that may not have a practical application in the rest of life. You know, you're not going to go out on the street corner and do your ribbon dancing to make a living, but it teaches you skills that are applicable in other ways. It teaches you.
And we're going to hold it right there and come back, talk more about spelling. We're talking with grammar girl Mignon Fogarty about the role of spelling in today's society. In light of the spelling bee going on right now in the national level, do you think it's still important to use good spelling? Do you think we're putting too much emphasis on it, or is it time to get more serious? 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. Tell us if you think spelling still matters.
Could you repeat the word, please?
The word is business.
Business. B-R-D-T-F-K.
A spelling bee gone horribly wrong with Will Forte on Saturday Night Live. Spelling is on our minds here on Central Time today because of the big Scripps National Spelling Bee on TV, the finals tonight. We've got grammar girl Mignon Fogarty on with us to talk about the merits of spelling in today's digital age. And we want to hear from you.
You're listening to Central Time, and we want to hear from you right now. We're taking your calls and comments at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you think spelling is still important, or are we putting too much emphasis on the specifics if the message is what's getting across? And if you've ever competed in a spelling bee, what do you think about all this? What about a word that, despite your best efforts, you cannot spell? It just eludes you. You have a spelling block. What are those words for you? 800-642-1234. What do you think about the effect that technology has had on spelling? Let us know what you think there. And in terms of what kids are learning in school, Mignon, I mean, do you think that spelling is still taught in the same way? Has that changed, you know, in the past 50 years?
I'm not sure. I know I was with my nephew just last week, and he was studying his list of spelling words, just like my little brother was all those years ago. I do think one interesting thing is that this focus on spelling is something of a modern thing. Before the printing press, words were spelled however people thought they sounded. There were at least 15 different ways to spell the word merry, for example, as in happy. And it wasn't until the printing press came around and the typesetters had to decide how to spell words and they decided to be consistent about it that spelling really became as fixed as it is today.
So it is something, I mean, we know that language changes over time. And I guess if you look at technology, you could be seeing a rapid change in the way things are now. Do you think there are certain things that are acceptable now because of technology, because of texting and tweeting that wouldn't have been acceptable before?
Yeah, and I think that new uses of words are emerging. You know, a few months ago, everyone was focused on how because is being used as a preposition or a shorthand. So you would say, you know, oh, I'm having a bad day because rain. You know, and that's a very internet way of saying it. But it's become so prevalent all over the internet that it is sort of seeping into more formal writing, and because is taking on this new meaning, and we all know what it means, and we use it informally, and it wouldn't be at all unexpected if in another 10 years it became more acceptable and maybe even part of standard English.
So for those of us who could use a little work on our spelling, what tips do you have for us?
Well, you know, online dictionaries are just so easy to use now. I mean, it's as simple as you can find the answer to any spelling question in about 2 seconds if you have access to a computer or a smartphone. So install a couple of those dictionary apps, and next time you're in doubt, look it up. And, you know, one of the things that I start, before I was Grammar Girl, I would often write around, you know, if there was a word I didn't know how to spell, I would just pick a different word. I would rewrite my sentence to just avoid the problem. But it's so easy to look things up now that if you just take that, you know, 10 seconds to look it up next time you aren't sure about a word, and then you'll learn something new.
Do you think there's something to heredity about spelling ability? Sometimes people say they're just, quote, good spellers, and other people say they're bad spellers. Is there anything to that?
Oh, I think there is. And, you know, I know a lot of people who are dyslexic who have trouble spelling. And, you know, they appreciate spell check and autocorrect, you know, more than anyone else. But there are definitely people who are better at spelling than others.
And why do you think that is? Is it just something in the way we're wired?
I imagine so. I mean, my husband is really, really good at math. And, you know, I'm not good at math, but I write much better than he does. So I think that we are born with inherent things we're good at and things we're bad at, but that doesn't mean you can't learn it. It just means it's going to be a little harder and you have to put forth the extra effort. You know, I can do math, but I had to work harder than he did to be able to do it.
Same here. All right, let's go to our phones now. We've got Caleb on the line from Manitowoc. Hi, Caleb.
Hi.
What do you think about spelling?
So I used to be in spelling bees, and while I really like that idea, it's a great way to learn words for kids, but I think it's more important to get across eloquence and to get across what you mean to say rather than focus on the specifics of how a word is spelled.
So for you, it's about the big picture, about the ideas.
Yes.
And yet you were a spelling bee kid.
I really enjoyed it, yeah. It was fun, but I like to learn the words more than to learn the specifics of how they're built.
So would you rather see schools focus on that, on conveying ideas, than on the spelling?
Definitely.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate that. And here is a Facebook comment from Miranda, who says, when it comes to spelling, I always think of the movie Aquila and the Bee. I love that movie. I think I saw that one a long time ago. Have you seen that one, Mignon?
No, I wanted to. I should go see if it's on Netflix or something, because it sounded wonderful.
And there's the movie Spelling Bee and a documentary about it. So clearly this is something that some people really care deeply about. What about you? Do you care deeply about spelling? Do you think that it still matters in today's world of autocorrect and technology and texting and tweeting? Does it still matter that we spell words correctly? Do you care if your kids are focusing a lot on spelling in schools? Or do you think more like Caleb that maybe we should be focusing in on the big ideas about conveying an idea about eloquence? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Mignon, are going to be watching the Spelling Bee on TV.
Yes, absolutely. I think those kids are amazing. You know, they put so much effort and heart into the competition. I just think, you know, they're great role models. They're really impressive kids.
All right, well, we're going to be watching along, too, or at least following the winning words. It's always fascinating to see if you could spell the word. Usually the answer is no,
right.
But at least from my point of view. But anyway, it's been great talking to you. Great considering spelling.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure.
We've been talking to Mignon Fogarty, better known as the Grammar Girl. She's the founder of the Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing series, which features several books and a weekly podcast about spelling and grammar. And we have a little Spelling Bee here on Central Time for Rob.
We do?
No, you
tell me you're going to do this.
No,
I'm
we
not
do.
Surprised.
I've only picked two words. Now, to be fair, these are the really hard words. These
okay.
are the words that won the championship, one in 1999, one in 2005. Are you ready for your first word?
Let's give it a shot.
Your first word, Rob, is...
Can you repeat the... Oh, wait. Sorry.
Your first word, Rob, is logorrhea.
Okay, logorrhea. L-O-G-O-R-R... H-E-A.
Congratulations.
Yes.
You just won the B in 1999.
All right. Yeah, I don't think I would have made it to the finals. But
okay.
I, the double R, I wasn't sure if it was going to be one or two R's.
Very good. Okay. So here's your second one from the year 2005. Your word, Rob, is appoggiatura.
Appoggiatura?
It's a musical term. Appoggiatura.
Yeah. Appoggiatura.
Right.
Okay. Oh, so it's a musical term. Mm-hmm. That gave it away. That
Did
was
it?
Your fatal mistake. all right. I may blow this one right at the top. A-P-P-A-G-I-A-T-U-R-A.
Oh, so
two,
close.
What was it, one P?
So close. No, it was two P's, two G's, but no A in the middle. So it's A-P-P-O-G-G-I-A-T-U-R-A.
That was close. Okay. I'm going to count that as a win.
Pretty good. 50%.
All right. Well, you can post on the Central Time Facebook page your thoughts on spelling, and we won't judge you if you spell anything incorrectly. That's the Central Time Facebook page. It's time for our weekly edition of Share Something. This week, we have some tools for you. Kevin Kelly is with us. He's senior maverick for Wired Magazine, editor of Cool Tools, a catalog of possibilities. He was on with us a while back to talk about that, and he's creator of the Cool Tools website. Kevin, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Well, remind us of the philosophy. When I think tool, I usually think, you know, a wrench or a hammer. You've got a bigger picture. What is a tool?
Tools, anything that is useful, and that can be something, not just a power tool, but also something like a book that would tell you how to do something, or a web app, or maybe even something like a chart or a piece of software.
So it's something that helps us accomplish something.
Yes, to help you make something happen, either to help you make something or make something happen. And things that we find useful. Sometimes they have the handle, but they don't always.
And what makes any given tool cool?
I define a cool tool as something that empowers you as an individual to do something that matters, and it may be either the cheapest available, or else it's the very best, or else it's the only thing in the world that will do it. And so those tend to make it cool.
Well, let's get in. You've got a handful of cool tools to share with us today, and you sent me along a list. This one sounds almost science fictional to me, a self-healing cutting mat. That self-healing part is what sounds weird. First of all, what do we do with a cutting mat for those of us who don't use them on a regular basis?
Yeah, the idea here is I was trying to pick out some tools that maybe were uncommon and people didn't know about that were still pretty general purpose. So mm-hmm. a lot of people have to cut stuff. If you are doing model making, or if you're working with paper, or say photography, or prints, or you're cutting on a flat surface. And if you're cutting on a flat surface with a razor knife or X-Acto blade, it tends to cut up the surface and makes it more difficult to cut because your blades are going to kind of go along the groove. A self-healing mat is a piece of kind of plastic that won't, you know, be harmed, because when it cuts into it, it doesn't leave a groove. And so even if you make 1,000 cuts on it, it's still perfectly smooth. And also, of course, it's not carving up your furniture at the same time.
So what's it made out of? Does it have some high-tech rosin inside that seeps out and seals the wound, or is it simpler than that?
It's a kind of a plastic that does reconform to and tends to fill in the little cut. It kind of squeezes itself out and yet remains perfectly flat. So it's not like space age, you know, something from NASA, but it's been around and pretty new, and you'll find these things kind of in any kind of a place where people are working with razor blades.
Now, most of the cutting I do is in the kitchen. Is there anything like this for a cutting board? Because after a little while, my cutting boards or our butcher block top, you know, they're packed with lines, and it looks kind of cool in character, but I worry, you know, germs are going to build up in there. Have you seen anything like that for cooking?
You know, that's really interesting question. I don't see it with cooking, and I don't see any reason why it couldn't be used. I think maybe most people have a cutting board and they don't care so much. You're not doing such precise work as you are with, say, model making, or you're trying to cut a print, or you're a draftsman or an architectural school where you have to be precise. When you're chopping, you're just kind of like, you know, if you're off a little bit, it doesn't matter. So, but it could certainly be used in a kitchen. If you were a really fanatic person who wants to cut the onions exactly so, then you should get one of these.
Well, staying with the cutting theme, and I've just brought up the kitchen, I tend to rely on the knives my wife and I were given when we got married. They're really quite old, and I don't really sharpen them. You've got a great chef knife that qualifies as a cool tool.
Yeah, this is, again, something that everybody can use. We've accumulated chef knives over the years, but this is the one that everybody, well, we have several of them at this point. These are the ones everybody kind of grabs first. This is a very high quality blade that's on a fairly lightweight handle, and it gives you the kind of insane sharpness that a professional chef knife would give you, but it's very inexpensive. It's in the $30 or $40 range, which for knives, chef knives, is very reasonable. And it's one of these knives that's now been highly recommended by everybody who does reviews, from Cook's Illustrated to the Wire Cutter to Cool Tools. And it works because it's lightweight, extremely sharp, dishwasher friendly. And inexpensive. And it's really, you know, if you want to get a really high-quality chef knife, for very little money, you can have this one.
And what's the make and model of that again?
There's in several different sizes. There's like a, I think it's 9-inch or an 11-inch, but it's called a Victorinox chef knife.
Victorinox. It's a mouthful.
Victorinox. And V-I-C-T-O-R-I-N-O-X. And, you know, it's on Amazon. And so you can get a smaller or larger size. And we actually use the smaller sizes, not the paring knife, but the small chef knife most.
Okay, now we're getting into air conditioning season, and we just finished a very long and brutal heating season here in Wisconsin and around a lot of the country. And I keep hearing about smart thermostats, wireless control thermostats. I'm not exactly sure why I need those things. What makes a great thermostat a cool tool?
So this is called the Nest thermostat, and it was actually kind of designed and invented by some ex-Apple people. So the main thing that it's doing is two things. It's smart in the sense that it's going to minimize the amount of fuel that you're using. And secondly, it has a tremendously friendly and fantastic interface to do these kind of complex things. So going to the first part, which is that it's it has things like it has motion sensors in it. So it knows when you are around. And more importantly, it can kind of learn what your general patterns are in your daily life. And so it will automatically, say, turn the heat up or turn the heat down, depending on the season, for your home before you get there. So it knows that, you know, you're going to be normally coming home at this time, and so it's going to start this process X number of minutes so that by the time you walk in the house, it's this. And it knows from your patterns that, you know, maybe you go to bed at this time, and so it will turn it down automatically afterwards, or you get up at this time. And so it also, the interface allows you to program this, but programming is too strong a word. It allows you to tell it or override it in any kind of patterns that you know and that you want. And you do this with a very simple turn of the front face. It's very intuitive. And you don't have to ever look up in a manual. You just know how to tell this complicated things. And the premise is that this is a higher priced thermostat, but it will save you that much money probably within your first year just in the fuel savings.
Want to invite our listeners to join in as we talk about cool tools at 800-642-1234. What is one tool you wouldn't do without? Why? And is there something you've newly discovered that you've got your eye on or that's made a big difference in your life? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We've got Kevin Kelly with the Cool Tools website with us. Kevin, a handcart, that's something a lot of times around the house I think, oh, it'd be handy if I had one. And if I'm out and about, I never, ever think of getting one. You've got a great handcart that you say you get a lot of use out of.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in hand carts, and we have kind of a full-size nylon one, and nylon because it's very lightweight and basically unbreakable. And if you can rent any size household, it's amazing how often you will use one of these. And if you're ever moving friends around, you're a hero if you bring one of these in because it makes moving books or whatever it is a lot easier. And I find myself using it all the time. It saves on your back. But the one I'm recommending, called the Magna handcart, is interesting because it's actually collapsible. It folds up, and so you can very easily throw it into the trunk of your car if you're moving things around. And you can also store it. So if you don't have a lot of room, it folds up into a very small size and stores. It's not as rugged as, say, the nylon or the metal one, but it will do an amazing job. And if you have to haul something down the street, or if you're moving something to somewhere in an office building, or you're even bringing a load of beverage cans from the street or somewhere to your garage, this is the thing that works. And it'll take probably 100 pounds or so, and Yet it will fold up and you can slip into a closet.
I've seen band guys use these for bass guitar amps. That's, I play saxophone. I don't haul a lot of amps around, but it always helped them. And it's a difference maker.
Yeah.
And then next we've got, now this is pushing the boundaries of a tool, Elance. This is a web service. What is that?
Yeah, so Elance is a kind of like an eBay for freelancers, and you're not buying products, you're buying services. And what it is a gazillion freelancers, not just in the U.S., but around the world, will work for you on a project basis. And the real innovation here is that, and it took me many years to discover this myself, there are so many things that you could have help on, and you don't have to do everything yourself. There's lots of things you could do with the help of someone else. If it was really easy to find that person and to hire them for a very limited, task or job, because oftentimes this is the process of finding this person and contracting with them and whatever it is, and evaluating them, it's just a lot of trouble. But Elance makes it very easy to have people work for you and help you do something. And the process is it deals with the money, and it deals with the reputation, it deals with finding them, it deals with you evaluating them. And so what I've learned to do is I can put up a job very fast. I may not know how much it's worth, but this is the genius of it, is all the freelancers around the world who see this job will bid. They'll say, I'll do it for this or I'll do it for that. And then you can kind of evaluate through how much they're suggesting they want, plus their own reputation from previous jobs. And you can give them a trial at that point if you want to. And the benefit of this is that it's, you can amplify your power, whether it's you need to have someone design, or you need some legal work, or you need someone to come do some wiring, or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be just virtual. It can be things that are very real. You can have someone help you for a very modest fee and done very quickly without a lot of transactional overhead, and that's the beauty of it.
Interesting. Time for a quick call from Tim in Stevens Point. Tim, you've got a tool for us.
Yeah, I was thinking about everything I always use, and I was going to say like my cordless, 18-volt stuff, but I thought really hard about it. I don't think I could ever live without my air compressor, and it's amazing when my wife and I go to people's houses and they don't have one in their garage, and it's like if people only knew how handy they were when you could buy. Air tools are relatively very cheap now. You can spray guns, air grinders, air trim nail guns are unbelievably easy to use if you want to put together some. It's people would be surprised at how easy it is to buy the tools, use them, and just airing up your tires, stuff like that they have around. I don't think I could ever live without air compressor. I'd be lost.
A plug for the air compressor. Tim, thanks for the call. And Kevin, thank you for joining us again.
It's a great pleasure, and may your tools be worthwhile.
Hey, that was Kevin Kelly, creator of the Cool Tools website. They recently released Cool Tools, a catalog of possibilities in print version.